Hi, the Pacific Group is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all members of the community are welcome to attend. The single most important aspect of AA recovery, however, is the principle of one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. Therefore, only alcoholics actually participate in our meetings. If your primary purpose is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful to you to contact an anonymous organization that more specifically deals with your addiction. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Good evening. My name is Andrea, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a membership, is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. Thank you. The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by a main speaker. Speakers, please note you will be given 5-minute and 1-minute reminders when it is time to wrap up your talk. Our first 10-minute speaker is Lizanne N.
Hey everybody, my name's Lizanne, I'm an alcoholic. Hi, thanks Marty for asking me. Thanks for calling me Eddie, I miss you. And I want to give a shout out to my Wednesday night seatmates, Jim B. and Tom N. I miss you guys. And the row behind us, Nathan, Mackie, Joan, Nancy, Buzz, and Butch. Miss you guys. Strange times we're living in. I'm so glad we have Zoom meetings. So... I'm an alcoholic. I come from a long line of alcoholics, generationally, both sides of my family. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley. I'm a Valley girl. And we moved around a lot when I was a kid. And my parents split up when I was 8. They split up when I was 8, and we lived with my mom for a few months. It was a harrowing time. She was running around crazy, getting drunk, and staying out all night. So my dad decided to come and take us. So I basically grew up with my dad. My sister and I like to say we were raised by wolves. There was nobody really looking out for us. You know, it was chaotic. I started drinking when I was about 13, and in the summer between 7th and 8th grade, we moved to this street called Halsey in Granada Hills. And, you know, I was a lucky girl because that was a street full of really fun people. When I first moved there was a girl across the street who, she turned out to be a cheerleader, and, you know, cheerleaders aren't really my crowd, but I tried to make friends with her, and what ended up happening was we went to a party together, and she got really high on pot, and somehow I got blamed for that and got kicked out of the carpool, so she and I did not remain friends, but 2 houses away, a guy named Sean lived, and that was the party house. That was the house where all the high school football players hung out and all the surfer guys hung out. And so I started hanging out there. That's where I learned to drink and shoot pool and do all kinds of stuff. And it was a fun time. When I was a young kid, I was a gifted child in school. I did really well. I loved learning, and I loved getting attention for being smart. But as I got older and it got harder, I didn't do as well. And I ended up, barely graduating 9th grade and going on to high school. And then in high school, I didn't graduate. I just took the GED, and I would have had to have gone a whole extra year to get enough credits to graduate. So I took the GED, and we had moved to another place. My dad got remarried when I was 17, and I was drinking and running wild. My stepmom was only a few years older than my oldest sister. Good for you, Dad. And you know, so I was running wild. And what ended up happening was I went to stay with my boyfriend for a weekend and I just never came home. So I ended up living in, on Silver Strand Beach for a few years, drinking, you know, working as a waitress. I was terrible at it. Just running wild. That relationship ended because the guy didn't like my drinking. So I ended up then going back home and staying with my dad. And little did I know at the time that my dad had gotten sober. And I, you know, I was like sneaking out at night and coming home in the morning, early in the morning. And one morning my dad came into my room and he said, get up, get dressed, get out. It's funny. I was thinking about that today and Luther Wood was my dad's sponsor. And I wonder if Luther gave him that direction. Luther, you're out there. I ended up going and staying with my mom. And that was the beginning of the end of my drinking. I started hanging out with some people who introduced me to freebase and cocaine. And I just, you know, slowly started, thanks Lydia. I just slowly started chipping away at my soul. The actions that I took behind, you know, drinking and using those drugs. I dated this guy and then he ended up like, you know, telling me to never come back to his house. And so I hooked up with his roommate and that turned out to be the father of my child. So that's what happened is in those last few years, I ended up getting pregnant and, you know, it's kind of like COVID time. Like when you're drinking and using and staying up for days, you kind of lose track of time. And I didn't want a child. I didn't want to be pregnant. I did not want to be a mother. I was not ready for any of that. And all of a sudden 5 months had passed. And so, you know, I had this little boy and I drank and used for the first 15 months of his life. In that 15 months, we lost our apartment. We lived with drug dealers. And at the end we were homeless living in a pop top VW van. And on the last night of my drinking, we were in a motel and, you know, me and my son's father got in this huge fight, you know, just an alcoholic fight in the parking lot. And, that was my moment where I just knew that I wanted my life to be different. And so the next morning I got up and I called my dad and he came and got my son and me and let us stay with him until I found a program. And I found a program that would let me take my son with me. And, we were there for 20 months. So I was there for 20 months before I came to you guys. And I got to go to a business school and learn how to use a computer so I could get a job and be self-supporting. And then I came to you guys and I got my first sponsor, Norma J, and I came to meetings and I had commitments and I went to the yard. I did all the stuff. And I tried to be a good mom and I had no idea what I was doing. You know, I came to AA and I got sober and I had this idea, like I'm sober, I can figure stuff out. So I didn't really know how to ask for help. It took me a really long time to surrender that part of my program. And at 10 years of sobriety, I was getting ready for my 10-year party and I was taking a shower and I was sobbing in the shower because I just felt like a fraud in AA. I just felt like I wasn't doing it right. So I made a decision to change sponsors and call her every day and do whatever she told me to do. And that was really, you know, the real first three steps for me, you know, knowing I was powerless, believing that maybe there was a different way to do it, and then turning my will and my life over to the care of somebody else. And my whole life changed. I fell into a group. Darlene M sponsored me and I fell into a group of sober women where I felt a part of, and it was so amazing. There was a whole bunch of us and I want to thank Laura McCabe for that time. I miss that time. It was amazing. One of the best times in my sobriety. And, you know, and then Darlene sent me to the sister program. Shout out to Vinoy Shah. I know you're out there. And I got some help there too. And, you know, from that day to this, so many things have changed. You know, I've worked the steps, I've worked lots of steps in many programs. And, you know, my that little boy that I brought in with me is doing well. He's 30 now, he's working, he has his own place. You know, and I have a really, really great life. You know, I've always been really lucky in my work life. Like, you know, I've always been able to be self-supporting. I've done very well that even though I'm not college educated, I've always done well with work, but it's the relationship part that I've always struggled with. And, you know, I'm still learning about that. And, you know, I'm seeing somebody now and it's going really well. And that's surprising. you know, my sponsor's Kenna. She helps me walk through all the crazy stuff that goes on in my life. I have lots of friends. I miss all of you so much. You know, I'm hoping that we can get together soon. And yeah, and if you're new, please stay. This is such a great program. And one day we'll all get to meet and be together. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Our second 10-minute speaker is John B.
First, I want to thank Marty for asking me to share. It's always an honor and a privilege to speak. I'd like to put a shout out there for my sponsee brother, Jason. Happy birthday, man. Well, I want to thank the first 10-minute speaker. She was very good. And also, I want to thank the main speaker in advance. I don't know. My story is pretty standard, I guess. You know, I also grew up in the San Fernando Valley. I lived there for about 42 years. My parents were pretty cool. I mean, I kind of grew up in a cult, you know, like a church cult. And, so I've always had kind of a connection to a God of an understanding. It was kind of in a weird way, but, you know, my parents were really into that spiritual aspect of living. And, you know, their way of dealing with their own relationship was yelling and was also mentally and physically abusing each other, you know. So at an early age, I really learned how to express my feelings, you know, in a really positive manner, you know. And you know, throughout life or throughout being, you know, a child, I was always the problem child. I was the middle of three children. And my brother and my sister, I would always fight with them because I wanted, you know, I was starving for attention. And my sister always got the attention because she was a baby. You know, I was always fighting with my brother too, so... you know, I started my journey with alcohol at the age of 15, and it was at church, and I got drunk, and it felt great. I was running around the church just I don't know, with my head cut off kind of, and it was just it felt great. Felt really awesome. I felt at home, you know. I think, you know, I was dabbling, you know, with alcohol here and there throughout high school. You know, I went to a Christian school, you know, up until the age 16 or 17. And then I went to high school at Monroe High School in the Valley. And I graduated from there. I actually graduated, which is kind of weird because I almost got suspended and you know, kicked out for possession of weed, you know, or marijuana. Yeah, my story has a lot to do with drugs. So hate to tell you that, but I love drugs. You know, I was just dabbling in, you know, acid and ecstasy and you know, I was playing around with speed when it was speed back then. Now they call it crystal meth, right? You know, what's funny is that I you know, my parents were really, really concerned with the way that I was performing with drugs and alcohol through high school. So, you know, they put me into an outpatient rehab at Kaiser, you know, and that was kind of the start of me learning about AA or learning about NA or CA or all the A's out there. And, you know, I really learned how to manipulate my parents and stuff. Well, jeez, 5 minutes goes quick. You know, from there, it really I really rapidly increased in drugs and alcohol. You know, it started with just weed and alcohol, and then it went to cocaine, and then crack, and then it went to you know, ecstasy and acid and anything I could really get my hands on to get me out of this, to get me out of my own head, you know, because I really wasn't having any kind of relationship with my parents. I didn't want to be part of that whole cult because I thought it was crazy, and I just wanted to escape, and I loved getting high, and I loved getting drunk, and it was just a lifestyle for me, you know. I've been to 7 different rehabs, you know, and I've been to jail twice. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is, you know, for the newcomer, you know, it's okay, you know, to feel where you're at, because I've been there many, many times, in and out of programs, in and out of rehabs, in and out of obviously jail, you know, and you know, living out of like holes in the wall, on the street, out of cars. It just went really, really bad, really quick. And, you know, I've been in and out of the program for a long, long time. I mean, I've had 2.5 years at one point, maybe like 2 or 3 times. And, you know, working with sponsors and working with others and working the steps with other people and, you know, always manipulating and doing my own thing. And finally, you know, I found the Pacific Group, you know, that's where my life really changed around, because I found a group that was a lot of structure, and that's what I need. Is I need a lot of structure in my life, because this mind of mine wants to tell me that it's okay for me to go out and drink and meet the girl and you know, convince myself that I'm not alcoholic and that it's okay for me to be out there drinking and causing havoc. You know, today, honestly, my life is very peaceful. I was able to work the steps with my sponsor in a day. I never thought that was possible, that you could do that. But, you know, we took about 9 hours in one day and actually did it, you know, and that was December 31st of last year. And it was a great new year for me because I got to start all over again, you know, and I got to start a new journey, you know, and I just took a year. A month and a half ago, you know, it's surreal, honestly. It's, you know, going through this whole COVID thing too, you know, I mean, I've been through some crazy depression, you know, like being at home, you know, because I have an underlying condition and I don't want to be at work where I'm always with the public. And, you know, I don't want to maybe perhaps get the COVID, right? So, you know, I was able to get a doctor's note and stay home for the first, you know, 4 months. And it was fine, you know, and I was able to maintain and stay self-supporting and stay in touch with my sponsor and go through those feelings, you know, while at home. And, you know, I was able to do a few things around this place, like paint my apartment and get some new furniture. But, you know, I just want to say, you know, that it's been a crazy journey for me going through what I go through. And just the simple things of getting on your knees and praying and trying to get rid of that ego or, you know, just trying to ask a higher power to lead you through the day, you know, because I go through a lot of feelings during the day and I go through a lot of egotistical people and a lot of chiefs, you know, sometimes I just have to demote myself and be the Indian, you know, to just go through day-to-day things, you know. And today it's great, man. My life is wonderful. I have a great job. It's got great benefits, retirement. So, you know, I want to be able to sponsor people, but it's super hard when you're, you know, here at home or at work and we're, you know, doing this whole thing. I think that was a minute timer. I think I'm probably done. So thank you.
Thank you, Chris N.
Hi, I'm Chris and I'm an alcoholic. I first want to thank Marty for the honor and privilege of speaking here at my home group. I also want to thank the first two 10-minute speakers and Lisa Ann and John. I got to tell you, you know what? If I was born and raised in the Valley, I would be an alcoholic too. So, you know, not to say that I don't have my own deep, rich history out in the beach, you know, beaches of Venice, but that's where my drinking career started. You know, I remember my first drink. It was a Mai Tai. Came in a little black can. You know, you shook it up, you popped the top, you're ready to drink. I didn't like the way it smelled. I didn't like the way it tasted, but that did not stop me. You know, halfway through that can, I felt my first high on alcohol. And what I thought was going to happen was I thought that there was going to be a big party, you know, friends and family were going to show up and we were just all going to have a big old get together. Nope, that's not what actually happened. What actually happened that day was that my chin hit my chest and I stared at my tennis shoes for a little while. And I thought to myself, wow, this is good stuff. And I started chasing that feeling. Because what alcohol did for me that day was it gave me a little bit of relief. All the pressures of the world at the age of 12 were off my shoulder. You know, I'm the first of three boys brought up in an old traditional Japanese home. And I don't know how many of you are number ones, but being number one in our family, my parents made it very, very clear to me that I was to be better than all of you. And to tell you the truth, it wasn't that hard. So when I finally got that alcohol and it relieved me of all the pressures of the expectations, you know, to perform, to meet standards, I was like, wow, what a relief. You know, I didn't seriously start drinking until I got into high school. High school, I ran into a real big problem. That problem was me, Chris. I did not like who I was, and I was not becoming the man I thought I should be. My perception of a man, 6'2", blonde hair, blue eyes, out there kicking ass all the time and screwing all the girls. That is a man. You know, I wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, and I see this short, pimple-faced Japanese kid, and I need a drink. And at that time, I'm drinking Southern Comfort. I got a half pint in my locker. I got a fifth in the car. Break time comes. I cruise on over to that locker, poke my head in there, grab that half pint, and bam, tip it back once, twice. And I stand there in front of that locker and I swallow it down. That warm, sweet, burning sensation's going down and the magic happens. Starts at the tip of my toes, comes up my spine and grabs me by the back of the head and now I'm ready for creative writing. And I fall in love with alcohol because it works perfect. After school, jump in the car, grab that fifth, take two pulls off of that bottle, bang, same effect. And the effects produced by alcohol are magical because it's perfect and it works. I got introduced to marijuana my junior year, but you know, I only smoke it on the weekends because I don't want to get addicted to it. So, you know, I drink a little bit during the week. On the weekends, I drink, smoke a little grass. I'm hanging out with all my buddies and we're going to Jack in the Box, right? And I'm living large. I'm having the best time of my life. And, you know, I'm on the varsity water polo team. I'm on the varsity swim team. You know, I get a couple awards here and there, and I get a bunch of attaboys from my mom and my dad. And that's all I want. That's all I want. And, you know, my parents at that time, you know, they might be, you know, fresh off the boat and everything. But to tell you the truth, they know, you know, they know I'm drinking and I'm smoking a little grass. But the simple fact of the matter is, as long as I bring home results, it's okay. And we don't look at that. And you know what? That's the game that we play in our family. And I'm okay with that game because I know the rules and regulations. Keep bringing home results. No questions asked. Get out of high school. I'm on my way to college. And I find out something else about myself. School, I'm good at it, but I don't like it. And this whole talk of college sounds like a huge time commitment. Commitment I'm just not willing to make because I'm just having too much fun. You know, I want to just, can't we just do 12th grade all over again one more time? You know, I just want to hang out in high school because I'm having such a good time. But no, we got to move on. So me and, you know, a handful of my buddies, we're all in the same boat. And what we do is we come up with this great idea. Why don't we all go and register over at Santa Monica City College, the local JC? You know, I go on over there and I sign up for their 8-year program. And I'm telling you, Santa Monica City College, just like high school. Except the classes are a little bigger and the students are a little older. That's it, you know? And I am not putting down SMC. I love SMC as an educational institution. I just didn't want it. You know, I just want to hang out. But I did learn a couple things with SMC. I learned how to hang out at the cafeteria, start drinking coffee, start smoking cigarettes. And, you know, when I needed a little pick-me-up, somebody taught me, you know, you put these two little white pills in your coffee and boy, focus, concentration right there, right? So I pick up this little mini white habit, but you know, I don't, like I said, I'm still performing, so I'm okay. And the disease of alcoholism for me is very slow and very patient. because in my mind, everything is just fine. Not that, you know, year over year, I'm, you know, adding a few more things to my repertoire of drinking, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And what ended up happening was, you know, I ran into these two older women in my chemistry class, and they introduced me to cocaine. I got to tell you, if I could still snort a half a gram of coke, have a couple of double greyhounds, quit, call it a night, go home, wake up tomorrow morning, and not wonder where my next drink or my next drug was coming from, you would have a different speaker here tonight. Somewhere in my drinking using career, I passed that so-called invisible line. And what it meant for me was I lost the ability to say no thank you. 2 days after I tried cocaine, I was selling it. And my entrepreneurial career took off, right? And I become the local cocaine salesman. You know, and don't get me, you know, it's not like, you know, I'm selling kilos or anything. No. I'm just the neighborhood cocaine salesman. And, you know, come to find out, I mean, it's pretty damn profitable as long as you don't do what you're selling. And that lasted, I don't know. I had a good run, you know, as a so-called drug dealer. Maybe it lasted about a year. Had a great time, right? Made a lot of money. And, you know, I'm sure plenty of drug dealers are out there. You know, when you have drugs and money, the power that comes along with that is intoxicating, and it just consumes me. And before you know it, that little quarter gram habit turned into an astronomical amount of cocaine. And for me, I drink alcohol every day because that's not my problem. Because alcohol in my mind is legal. As long as it's legal, it's okay. It's all of this illegal stuff that, you know, I may be having a little problem with. And so what I started to do is, you know what, back in 1983, I started to cruise around meetings at AA and NA and CA, and just like John, all the A's, right? Because, you know, I'm a pretty smart guy, right? And I know maybe something's not right. And so I start coming to these meetings, and I see all of you. And you know what I see back in 1983? I see a room full of loser alcoholics. I mean, look at you people, for God's sake, you know? You're white, you're black, you're Mexican. I don't see no Japanese people here in 1983. You know, you guys are talking about a disease called alcoholism. I don't know about you, it was way too simple for me. You know, because I'm a thinker and I think deep thoughts. So I need to be talking about stuff like culture, tradition, pride, you know, something of a higher caliber. And I got to tell you, that kind of thinking almost killed me. Because what I was doing back then was I'm building this little wall between me and you. Now I'm different than you. And as long as I'm different than you, I can't have what you're trying to give me. And I got to go. And I leave. And that starts almost 5 long, hard years of going in and out and in and out of these rooms. And the disease of alcoholism is just kicking my ass. It's just throwing me around like a rag doll. And the thing is, you know, I'm coming to meetings. I've got a sponsor. I've got a big book. I read the big book. You know, I got to tell you, for those of you who are new out there, the big book, it's not that hard to read, right? I read that book cover to cover and, you know, studied the book. So I understand the book. You know, you want to talk about Bill and Bob, I could talk to you about Bill and Bob. You want to talk about the steps, I could talk to you about the steps. You want to talk about the jaywalker, you know, no problem. I don't have any problem with that, right? And the only difference is, you know what? See, you people were doing it. I was only talking about it. Come to find out, there's a big difference. And knowledge did not keep me sober. And I'm going in and out and in and out, and I'm arguing with you. And every time I leave, you say, hey, Chris, you keep coming back. And I say, yeah, all right, you know. And then you say, Chris, you keep coming back, even if you're still drinking and using. You keep coming. And I thought to myself, ooh, really? You want me to keep coming here, even if I'm still drinking and using? You say, yes. I go, okay. So I test you. I'm coming to meetings loaded out of my mind, going to the podium, taking chips, sharing about some spiritual experience I had in some $12 a night motel with a crack pipe in one hand and a half pint in another. You know, and you just keep coming back, Chris, keep coming back. And never, ever did you say, hey, Chris, you can't come here no more. We can't have your kind. If there's anybody here tonight that is struggling, try to stay sober, whether you've been here, done that, and you're having a tough go at it, you know what? Contact our newcomer host, Gabe and Cara. My number will be available because I know what that feels like to keep coming here, and I know the program. I just can't get the program straight. The last year and a half of my drinking and using, it got so bad. I'm putting so much poison in my body that if I drink something, snort something, smoke something, anything, bam, I'm on the ground and I'm ODing. I'm waking up in emergency rooms, strapped down on the gurney with hoses coming in and out of my arms. And I'm thinking to myself, what's a nice guy like me doing in a place like this? And I can't figure it out. You know, one day, you know, I came to in the back of an ambulance, strapped down on the gurney one more time with hoses coming in and out of my arms. And as I came to, the paramedic is leaning over me. And I see his name tag, Tom, T-O-M. And he says, you know what, kid? He says, one of these days, you're not going to wake up. That same paramedic had picked me up 7 days earlier, and my life was in total free fall. And no matter how much I knew about the program or how slick I thought I was and every angle I had covered, the disease of alcoholism was just put me down. Finally, May 20th, 1987, one more time, you know, I come to stark naked on the floor of another cockroach-infested motel. And that morning, God graced me with just enough willingness for me to say, you know what, all right, I'm willing to do it your way. And that started this whole thing called sobriety. I checked myself into a rehab. You know, I spent my first 28 days in that rehab. And, you know, turn right, I turn right, turn left, I turn left, jump, how high? I do everything they asked me to do. We must have been going to, what, 10, 12 meetings a day from 6 a.m. to 10 o'clock at night, you know. Insider meetings, psychology meetings, this outsider, you know, panels, and oh my God, meeting. But you know what? For a guy like me, I love that structure because that way I don't have to think. All I have to do is just follow you. And that's exactly what I did. I just started to follow all of you. No matter how stupid some of the stuff you were telling me to do, and there are some pretty stupid things. And I will tell you, you know, I had a sponsor, right? I had a sponsor when I was going in and out of the rooms. And this old guy, I mean, I swear to God, he could not keep me sober if his life depended on it, right? But all of a sudden, I turned my will and my life over to you. And that old guy turned into a pillar of sobriety for me. And I remember him telling me distinctly, because now, you know, here I am, I'm like in this rehab, you know, I picked up a little bit of weight, I'm sleeping, and, you know, I'm raring to go, right? And I got the big book and I'm ready to go. And he told me, you know what, Chris, just put that book down. He says, I don't want you to read that book. I was like, what? He says, what I'm going to do is I want to show you how to live the book. He says, there's no sense in me trying to help you go through the steps if you cannot stay physically sober for 6 months. Oh, man. I don't know about you, but that kind of hit me like, what? You know, I'm raring to go. But okay, I did what he asked me to do. And what he got me to do is he got me involved in Alcoholics Anonymous with all of you. He got me to take commitments that I didn't like. He got me to take cleanup commitments, setup commitments, you know, I didn't like it, but I thought, you know what, I'll do it for all of you, right? Yeah. Oh, man. And I guess, you know what, for me, at least, doesn't matter what the motive is, I just had to do it. His favorite commitment for me was, you know what, he always had me be a greeter at the meeting. Any meeting I went to, and he'd put me at the front door and he'd tell me, you know what, Chris, you need to shake everybody's hand that comes through that door. And you need to say, hi, I'm Chris, and I'm an alcoholic. Everybody. You know, you do that for about 2 or 3 months and people start to go, you know what, we know you're Chris, you're an alcoholic. And I never understood what it is or why he had me do that. But I look back on it now, you know what, for an arrogant alcoholic like me to be able to stand at the door and let you know who I am and what I'm doing here and that I'm just like you, that leveled the playing field and I didn't even know it. And my life started to take off. Slowly but surely got out of that rehab, you know, and out of that rehab, I'm, like I said, I was feeling pretty good, you know, and what do good drug dealers do? We go back to mom's house, right? And I'll tell you, the counselors over there, they were like, no, 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 no. We want you to check yourself into a halfway house. I was like, a halfway house? Don't you know? I'm coming up on 30 days of sobriety. You know, you've must be talking to the wrong client or something. No, you got the right guy. So I spent my first year in this halfway house. Well, they call it sober living now. And, you know, we had everything from, you know, the guy right out of prison, all the way up to we had this surgeon in the house. And what I learned in that house is that the disease of alcoholism doesn't care about the color of my skin, what religion I am, how much money I make, what I drive, or who I sleep with. I used to think all that stuff had something to do with alcoholism. Doesn't. I have the disease of alcoholism because once I put something that affects me from the neck up, it alters my chemical balance and I'm off. I've got a lot of friends that I used to party with. It doesn't happen like that. I'm the only one. So I'm, you know, in this, you know, sober living and doing all the things you people are asking me to do. And I got to tell you, I've been a member of the Pacific Group now. I mean, from my 60th day of sobriety. And I'll tell you how I got here. You know, I run a small family business. And back now, this is over... oh my God, this must be over 40 years ago. You know, Clancy was a customer of my parents. And at that time, I'm just this teenage alcoholic, just, you know, practicing and ready to come into full bloom. And, you know, this old guy is coming on into my parents' shop and he'll park in the back, come through the delivery door. And I'm sitting in the office, I'm drinking and I'm using. He walks by the office and he goes, hey kid, get off your ass and help me. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. whoa, you know, who's talking to me like that? So I poke my head out there, and he starts barking out all these orders. You know, give me four of those. Give me two of these. Give me. You know, and I was like, wow. But, you know, I didn't even have time. I just did whatever you said. I was doing it. It was a big order. I put it all together. And, you know, I'm standing at the cash register, and I'm ringing them up, and I tell them, you know, I tell them the total. I show them the receipt. He doesn't even look at the receipt. He just writes the check. So I put that little bit of information in my little memory bank there, right? A few weeks later, same thing. He comes on in, you know, we're staying at the cash register. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, I wonder if this old man is on his toes. So I start punching in some bigger numbers. And you got to remember, back 40 years, you know, we didn't have scanners or barcodes or anything. The cash register was just a big calculator. And it added every number I put into it. And I put in some extra numbers, right? I tell him the total. I show him the receipt. He doesn't even look at the receipt. He just writes the check. And I'm thinking to myself, don't you dare come in here screaming and yelling at me, because I'm going to kick your butt. That's what I'm thinking to myself, right? And I'm like, you keep coming back. And I was overcharging him every single time he came in. Oh, my God. It was almost a little too easy, right? One afternoon, he comes in, and he's in a good mood because he's not yelling at me. He's talking to me. And what he was bragging about, one of his daughters going to some fancy schmancy university, or, you know, he's just like a proud father, just blurting about this kid, and on and on. I just stood there. I was like, oh my God. But you could tell he had a lot, that sense of pride, you know, as a father. And then he says, you know, my kid's got submarine grades. I was like, what? Submarine grades? He says, yeah, they're all below sea level. And I'm like, whoa. You know, that is about as corny a joke as you're ever going to get. And he's laughing at his own joke. And I was like, oh my God, this got to go. And finally, right, I get sober. And I put one and one together. Clancy I, 1212 Lake Street, because I'm looking at his check. And a lot of you have seen his check. You know, instead of a smiley face, what he has is he has a smiley face, but instead of a smile, he's got a straight line. And it says, have an ordinary day. And I thought, oh my God, I wonder if this guy is, you know, Clancy, the AA guy. One afternoon, he comes in, we're standing at the cash register, and I say, you know, are you Clancy, the AA guy? He goes, yep. And I go, whoa, it's him. So I get up a little bit of courage, and I blurt out, I go, I'm sober now. I'm coming up on 30 days of sobriety. He says, that's good, kid. End of conversation. And I'm thinking, I was like, wait. I'm the new guy. You're Mr. AA. You know, give me something. Tell me, let go, let God. First things first, turn it over. Something, anything, nothing, zippo. But that day, I didn't overcharge him. A few weeks later, comes in again. They're standing at the cash register, and he says, hey, kid, are you still sober? I go, oh my God, he's talking to me. Yes, sir, I'm still sober. I'm coming up on 60 days of sobriety. Yes, sir. He says, you ever hear of the Pacific Group? I go, oh, you're those crazy people. He says, yeah. He says, we get together every Wednesday at the synagogue on Sunset. You know where that is, kid? I go, yes, sir. Yes, sir, I do know where that is. Yes, sir. He says, why don't you come on up this Wednesday? I'm getting a personal invitation to the Pacific Group of Alcoholics Anonymous by Clancy I himself. I come rushing on up to the synagogue at Wednesday evening, right? Thinking he's going to be at the door waiting for me. There is a line of people snaking down Sunset into the parking lot when we were still lining up back then. I mean, there must have been 1,000 people out there. And I got in the back at the end of the line. And come to find out, he personally invited all of you. And that started my journey in the Pacific Group. You know, it hasn't always been all fun and games, but I will tell you, you know, once I started practicing these principles that I was taught in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started to take these principles outside into the real world, tell you a little secret, all those principles work out there too. And my life exploded. Before you know it, the business takes off, money, power, prestige, pouring in like I've never seen. And I will tell you, during that period, me and God, we're like that. Fell in love. And I think to myself, as long as I keep doing what you asked me to do, I'll keep getting what I want to get. And I will tell you, you know, met a beautiful woman, you get married, we have twin boys, just live this perfect life, travel all over the world, live in this big house. And, you know, I mean, it's a dream. It's literally a dream. 10, 15, 20 years go by. And, you know, when I was 30 years sober, you know, I was on a business trip in Chicago, and my wife of 25 years up and left me. And I came back to this empty house, and, you know, I was totally caught off guard. And, you know, I knew we were having some problems and everything, but still, you know, I mean, come on, look. I'm 30 years sober, I got all this stuff going on. I mean, who the hell would leave a guy like me is what I'm thinking to myself. No, she up and left me. And I suck it up a little bit, and I go, you know what, don't worry. I've got AA, and I've got God, and I've got all this, yada, 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 yada. And I'm gonna get through this. I'm going to get through this. And I start toughing it out. But what starts to happen is, you know what? Things start to come apart a little bit. And, you know, with all the stuff that she took, she also took our dog. And, you know, I remember telling my attorney, you know what? I don't care about all the money and all that stuff. I told him, all I want is I just want visitations with my dog. So he wrote a little letter saying, hey, all he wants to do is see the dog maybe twice a week. That's it. We got a little short 2-paragraph letter back in a couple of days said, you know what? Go to hell. You're never going to see that dog again. And that tipped me over the edge. And I just dropped into a deep, deep, dark depression. And I was lost. And I was looking for God, and you know what? God in my eyes was not there because I wasn't getting what I thought I deserved. And then I started turning my back on God, and then I started turning my back on all of you, and I started to blame you, and I started getting angry. And one Friday morning, you know, I mean, jump out of bed, and the disease of alcoholism is screaming at me. And I'm running around the bedroom. And I don't want to drink and use, but all of a sudden the thought of hanging myself comes in, and boom, there it is, relief. Just like that very first drink. And I know everything is going to be okay. So I set up this little plan, you know, finish out the day, and I'm just going to hang myself, you know, Saturday when there's nobody at the warehouse. And so I just happened to mention this to a friend of mine who I called that morning, and he called the cops on me. And the cops show up in my office, pull me out in the parking lot, right? And I'm thinking, what the hell is going on here? And the cops go, you know, a friend of yours called and said, you may hurt yourself. So me being the good alcoholic, I tell him the truth. You know, I tell him, yeah, you know what? I'm planning on hanging myself in the warehouse tomorrow, right? And the next thing I know, I'm handcuffed in the back of the squad car. And I got thrown into a lockdown psych ward on a 5150. And you know, when you're sitting in a lockdown psych ward with 30 years of sobriety, that's a very, very humbling experience. And, you know, I did not know why I was there. I swear to you, I didn't know. And, you know, one of my AA brothers, Sean, came and brought me a big book. You know, I'm reading the big book in the TV room there, and a guy across the way goes, hey, how long have you been sober? I go, oh, no. I go, 30 years. And he goes, 30 days? You've been sober 30 days? I've been sober 14. I was like, no, not 30 days. I've been sober 30 years. You should have seen the guy's eyes almost fell out of his head, you know? And, you know, that anniversary is coming up 3 years next month. And what I had to do from that day forward was, you know what? I had to rebuild my relationship with all of you and with God. Had to start taking some direction again. Tom B., my sponsor, you know, he always told me, quit working so hard, take some time off. So I started to take the time off. Started getting involved in church, started going to church on a regular basis because I'm seeking God. Started this class, you know, a little over a year ago. You know, last month, you know, I was baptized and I was entered into the church. One of the most profound moments of my sobriety. You know, here I am with 33 years, and I will tell you, I've lived a blessed life. I may not have always been grateful for it, but every time I come here, I listen to you, and I put my faith in your hands and trust you. I mean, really, really trust you. My life starts to flourish, and I'm able to get that relief one more time. Not from the bottle, not from the money, the girl, family. I get it from my relationship with God that I'm filled and I am okay. Marty, thank you again for asking me to speak one more time, and, you know, peace be with all of you. Thank you.
We celebrate AA birthdays at this meeting. We define sobriety as freedom from alcohol, pills, pot, anything that would affect you from the neck up. If you're a regular attendee of this meeting and would like to take a cake with us, please email our scribe, Ann P., at birthdays@pacificgroupla.org.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ann P. I'm an alcoholic. Make sure you include your picture and get it in by 6:30. Thank you very much for allowing me to be of service.
Thank you. Do that. Otherwise, you'll have to wait until the following week to get recognized. We have several birthdays tonight. And we've asked a special guest to sing us a birthday song to our recipients.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday to you. Keep coming back.
Woohoo! Thank you, Paul. And our birthdays are, and our birthdays are, and our birthdays are.
It's up there, Marty. Let me do it again.
There it is. No, I still don't see it.
Not seeing it, Morgan.
I hear a kitty cat.
Sorry about that. Okay, good.
Well, I'm sorry, folks.
Okay, Marty, I can jump in here.
Thank you.
We've got 1 year for Monique J, whose sponsor is Susie S. Happy birthday, Monique. We have a 5 year birthday for Michelle B, and her sponsor is Sarah A. Jason W is celebrating 6 years, and his sponsor is Marty? We have a 7 year birthday for Joe F, and his sponsor is Mitch R. Happy birthday. Marie K is celebrating 28 years, and her sponsor is the fabulous Marianne K. That's a total of 5 birthdays for 47 years, which is an average of 9.4 years. Happy birthday, everyone.
Thank you, Georgia, for stepping in and helping me out. We have a custom at the Pacific Group of donating $1 for each candle on your birthday cake. At the end of the year, this candle money is our contribution to AA organizations worldwide who deeply need our help right now. If you wish to participate in this custom, you can email our treasurer, Betty H, at treasurer@pacificgroupla.org, and she'll give you a couple methods of how you can contribute. Underneath